Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome you all here to the Legislative Council meeting and apologize for being a few minutes late. There was some house business that needed to be taken care of, and that's where the house members were. So I'd like to also mention that we have online with us Senator Hoffman, Senator Cowdery, and if we could ask for a roll call vote. And before we do that, I would like to mention that there has been a new agenda, and you should all have it in front of you. There was an old one, or I should say, this is the updated current agenda you should have in front of you, not the one you originally received a few days ago. Does everyone have that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll proceed forward with the roll call, please.
Senator Cowdery.
Yeah, here.
Senator Davis.
Present.
Senator Elton.
Here.
Senator Green.
Here.
Senator Hoffman.
Here.
Senator Stevens.
Here.
Senator Wilkin. Representative Coghill.
Here.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Here.
Representative Harris.
Here.
Representative Samuels.
Here.
Representative Stoltz.
Here.
Representative Wilson.
Here.
Representative Guttenberg.
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. Let's proceed forward with the minutes. And Pam, if you could answer any questions that folks have about the minutes from the previous meeting or go over some highlights from them.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Before the members, we were to revise the August 17th, 2007 minutes, which we have done. We also have the December 10th, 2007 minutes before the members, and our last meeting, January 3rd, 2008.
Are there any questions from any of the members? Alrighty.
I move that the Legislative Council approve the minutes of the August 17, 2007, December 10, 2007, and January 3rd, 2008 Legislative Council minutes be approved as presented.
Are there any questions, or are we all in agreement?
We have to have a roll call vote, the Senator Cowdery.
Thank you. And you are correct, Senator Cowdery. We will do a roll call on every motion due to the fact that we have folks online. So if you'll go ahead, please.
Senator Cowdery.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Elton.
Yes.
Senator Green.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Yes. Yes.
Representative Samuels.
Yes.
Representative Stoltz.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
13 yeas, no nays.
All right, thank you. The next item that we have on the agenda is the sanctioning of charitable events. And these are events that many of you have participated in before. Many members here at the table are involved. Neighbors Feeding Neighbors Banquet, the Glory Hole fundraiser, and Thanksgiving in March. Pam, I don't know if you have additional information that needs to be added to that, if anything's been dramatically changed from the way they've been run before.
Madam Chair, no, it's just to let the members know that we just today received the request for Thanksgiving in March, and that's one of the reasons the agenda was revised.
Alrighty.
Madam Chair, I move that Legislative Council sanction below charitable events per Alaska's AS24.60.080C10, Neighbors Feeding Neighbor Banquet, Glory Hole Fundraiser, and Thanksgiving in March.
Let's take a roll call vote on that, please.
She doesn't understand the principle.
Senator Cowdery?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Elton?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Representative Coghill?
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Yes.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Samuels?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
13 yeas, no nays.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is late per diem approvals for Senators Gary Stevens and Senator Jean Terrio and Representative Jay Ramirez. Pam, is there any additional information that the members of the committee need on those, or are they just a standard late request?
Madam Chair, it's just a standard late request.
All right.
Chair?
Yes, Representative Stoltz.
We can establish some policy of expiation or atonement to, and with the company with some humiliation if not eliminate, curtail this chronic problem every meeting dealing with these not scoff laws, but just prioritize their activities with that. I don't have an objection.
I abject apologies.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz and Senator Stevens. If you could go ahead and do a roll call.
Excuse me, the motion. Yeah. I move that Ledge Council approve the late travel and per diem request for Senator Gary Stevens, Senator Jean Terrio, and Representative Jay Ramirez.
Thank you. If we could have a roll call vote, please.
Senator Cowdery.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Elton.
Yes.
Senator Green.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Samuels.
Yes.
Representative Stoltz.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
13 yeas, no nays.
All right, thank you. That passes. The next item that we have on the agenda, number four, is the contract amendment approval. And I would ask Ms. Varney if she could please brief us on that and then answer any questions that the members have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The legislature has a long-term relationship and contract with Birch Horton Bittner and Shiro. And before the council today is asking the council to amend the dates of performance, also the project director, and increasing the contract amount by $25,000. Birch Horton Bittner and Shiro were paid a total of $17,348 in FY07, and we are changing the project director from our majority legal counsel, who's no longer with us, to the council chair as the project director. And also, this contract expired January 15, 2008, and so this would extend the contract to January 15, 2009, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions from the members?
I move that Ledge Council approve an amendment to Birch Hartner, Bittner, and Shiro contract, amending the dates of performance, project director, and increasing the contract by $25,000.
Thank you. If we could have a roll call, please.
Senator Cowdery.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Elton.
Yes.
Senator Green.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Samuels.
Yes.
Representative Stoltz.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
13 yeas, no nays.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda, number five, is the Office of the Ombudsman and the FY09 budget request. And Linda Lord Jenkins is here with us today. If you would please come forward and state your name and title and give us an overview.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Linda Lord Jenkins, and I am the State of Alaska Ombudsman. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today. I'm submitting my FY09 budget. The budget requests $953,000 for staff and expenses for the Ombudsman's office. This is an increase of $70,000 over the adjusted base for fiscal 08. Last year we asked for an increase in staff. We have 8 people on staff in the Ombudsman's office. We did not get an appropriation of sufficient money to fund an additional investigator. We got some roll forward from conference committee, but that was insufficient to pay for a full investigator. And what we have done with that, that roll forward money is to pay for casual labor to come in and provide assistance in intake, in special projects. We've had casual labor come in and do research for us on some of the investigations under the supervision of our full investigators. We have had in the office a dramatic increase where business is booming, and we're finding that it's just difficult to keep up with it. We had a 27% increase in the number of complaints to the office in fiscal 07 over fiscal 06. There was an 18% increase in complaints to the office in calendar 07 over 06. And before I flew down here, I checked the number of cases that we have received in 2008, and there's a 14% increase to date in 2008 over the same date in 2007. So, like I said, business is booming, and it's difficult for us to keep up with that without additional staff. So I respectfully ask that the Ledge Council support my budget request.
Thank you, Ms. Jenkins. Are there questions from members of the committee? Representative Stolz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Jenkins, through the chair. One of the concerns I've had about this is the increasing load of prisoners that that your department is dealing with, accompanied with your continuing attempts to assert jurisdiction over the Office of Victims' Rights, and the accompanying tension of the very inconsistent, almost I guess the word we are conflicted interests of the two client bases. And what is your current percentage of caseload of incarcerated misdemeanants and felons?
The current, Representative Stolz through the chair, the current percentage of caseloads for 2007 of cases filed against the Department of Corrections, and we don't have it broken out by specifically inmate, but all cases against corrections are 25% of our caseload. Of those, the percentage of case of complaints that we receive that we decline immediately because the complainant inmates, if they are inmates, have not gone through an available grievance or appeal process, are about 75%. So we sort those out immediately. The kinds of cases that we take, we are more inclined to take immediate action on, involve medical issues. These folks are incarcerated. They are at the sole mercy, if you will, of other people, and frequently they have medical issues that at least present to us as not being addressed. So we do look at those medical issues quickly. Mental health issues also are included in that number. And regarding the Office of Victims' Rights, I'm aware of the statute, the bill that was proposed to remove OVR from our jurisdiction. I have not supported that bill, as you are aware, and that's a difference in philosophy. It's just a difference in how we view the statute, our statute, as we have reviewed it through the years. I have spent a little bit of time talking to the current advocate since the bill was introduced in the legislature. We have been referring complaints to the victim's advocate to handle initially. And we have, quite frankly, indicated to complainants that there is this issue, and that complainants who believe that they're not getting the right sort of response or response that satisfies them should probably talk to their legislator or to the two bill sponsors, because I think that gives you a better idea of what kind of complaints that we're seeing out of OVR. I don't think that this probably is the proper venue to discuss our concerns about the merits of that bill. I would be happy to discuss any sort of additional research that we've done regarding some of the assertions that OVR has made about the grievance process, but I am available to discuss that.
Follow on?
Go ahead. It's not on another subject. It's just another question, if you want to follow up.
I'm not going to say anything else other than I had some concerns last year, removed my objection. I'll maintain my objection, so we won't have to have the roll call vote, but I'll make the symbolic stand on this.
All right, thank you. Senator Green.
I was just going to ask you, have you seen an increase in the workload based on the Executive Budget Act, Ethics Act?
We have just completed a very complex investigation into how the executive branch handled Executive Branch Ethics Act complaints. The investigation was prompted because of complaints about two relatively minor actions that were allegedly carried out by someone at the Department of Natural Resources. We referred that to the DNR designated ethics supervisor, and we were not satisfied that the supervisor responded efficiently or in a timely manner. Because of that, we conducted an executive branch-wide survey on how the DES, as the designated ethics supervisors, conduct their business. What's their training in how to be a DES? What training do they give department employees? It's been my position, and I've stated this several times, legislators and legislative staff constitute less than a couple hundred people in state agencies. We have 14,000 state employees who basically don't know what the EBEA says or does, and that it is incumbent on those people in the administration to train them. And we did not find that there was any sort of coordination between the individual departments, the Department of Law, and the Division of Personnel to conduct coherent, understandable training of employees. We made 10 recommendations to DNR, to Law, and to the Division of Personnel. As a result, Law has updated the ethics training website. Law has started training all of the DESs in the individual departments, and I understand, talking from Judy Bachman, that Law is done with the individual departments and is now working with the boards and commissions. In addition, the Division of Personnel has one of the things that we were concerned was that that little bit of training that they did with new employees was jammed into that thick packet of information that everyone gets when they sign on to the state. That's a lot of information to try and understand in a short period of time. We recommended that they separate the first day document signings from the time that people take their ethics training to, say, a month later, so that they can sit down with some sort of an understanding of their job and go through the ethics training and take the ethics training so they understand what they're supposed to be doing. Personnel agreed that that was a good idea. We're very gratified with how personnel and Law have responded to this. But we are seeing more ethics complaints, yes. We get a lot of complaints.
Follow up?
And will you be monitoring that in the future?
Okay. Senator Green, through the chair. Yes, we have been monitoring it as we go. When we get ethics complaints, we try, again, as in most complaints that we get to the office, if there is an available process, we route it through the process. With the ethics complaints that we're getting in now, we are routing them to the designated ethics officer if we believe that it is appropriate, and then we are monitoring how the DESs respond to those complaints.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was following up on Representative Stoltz's question. You had mentioned that, I want to give you some solid numbers here. You said 75% of the initial claims from the Department of Corrections you deny. Can you give me a number on that? And then you said you move ahead on 25%, just roughly, so we'll know the volume we're dealing with.
Senator Stevens, through the chair, if I can pull my numbers up. In calendar year 2007, we received 174 complaints from about the actions of the Department of Corrections total. That includes inmate complaints, which admittedly is the bulk of the complaints. It also includes complaints from citizens who may have a problem with what DOC is doing, but the bulk of the complaints admittedly are from inmates. In 75% of that would be about 100 and some. I'm looking here. In 22% we categorized as assists, which means that we referred complaints, we may have given complainants information, We may have made a call for a complainant. Let's say they say they're not getting their blood thinners, and they're on blood thinners, and they're not getting the blood thinners. We will make a call to the medical staff to see what's happening, and that's how we categorize as an assist. A jurisdictional decline means that folks have a complaint, they haven't bothered to talk to anybody about it, or they've maybe talked to somebody, filed what they call a cop-out. It's a request for interview, but they haven't gone any further. The complaint process for the Department of Corrections is very specific. They first ask that inmates file an informal request for request for interview, which is a cop-out, to try and resolve it without going through paperwork. If that doesn't work, they have the option to file a grievance about a matter, or they have an option to file an appeal if it talks about classification issues. They have the right to appeal the agency's decisions in those cases. We direct that they go through those appeal processes. We don't want inmates coming to us, to our department, because expecting us to be kind of stand up like mommy and fight their battles for them if they can fight their battles on their own. The other advantage of that is we have information on the record then. A written cop-out is kept. They have a copy of that. Written grievances are kept. Written appeals are kept. We can then look to see how the agency up the line has responded, because frequently line staff can make an error, but you would hope that their supervisors or in this department the superintendent would recognize if there is a procedural error, if there is a rules violation. An example of one case that we investigated a couple years ago, it involved an inmate who was being denied the ability to contact his attorney. He had a court case going on, and he was not allowed to call his attorney, which is a clear violation of the Department of Corrections policies and procedures, regulations, statute, and the Constitution. And in this case, it was a superintendent who made the denial repeatedly. We conducted a full investigation on this. The commissioner at the time admitted, yes, you're absolutely right, this is a violation, and took corrective action in that case. No, but that inmate we required go through the process. We also, however, in that case found that the process, he wasn't being replied to by the superintendent who had made the error initially. Does that sufficiently answer your question?
Well, it looks like through the chair, there were some 45 cases you dealt with in 07 that came through the Department of Corrections. I'm just trying to get a number there.
In 07, I'm sorry, Senator Stevens, through the chair. In 07, we had 174 complaints against the Department of Corrections, and that constituted 26% of our overall caseload. The bulk of those complaints were declined because they did not go through that process. And then we took action in the other complaints.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there any further questions? All right, if we could have a motion, please.
I move that Ledge Council submit the Office of the Ombudsman FY09 budget request to the Senate and House Finance Committees for their review and action.
Seeing no objections.
There's people. We have to do a roll call vote.
Madam Chair?
Well, yes, sir.
I just want to clarify. I really don't object to us submitting the budget. I just this particular budget.
We could have a roll call, please.
Senator Cowdery.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Elton.
Yes.
Senator Green.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Senator Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Samuels.
No.
Representative Stoltz.
No.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
I can't let Bill be alone.
11 yeas, 2 nays.
All right, thank you. The next item that we have on the agenda is number 6, Legislative Affairs Agency 09 budget request. And I'd like to ask Ms. Varney to give us an overview and then answer questions that we have on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before the members, in your packet is the Green Legislative Affairs Agency FY09 proposed budget. The legislature's budget structure, there are 13 separate budget components and three RDUs, and this Legislative Affairs Agency budget has 8 of those 13 budget components and 2 of those RDUs. Our request this year in FY09 is a reduction of $1,677,900 from our FY09 governor's figures. The Legislative Affairs Agency FY09 request is a 4% reduction from the governor's figure. Our adjusted base, our FY09 adjusted base figure for the Legislative Affairs Agency was the same as our FY09 governor's figure. And attached to this budget, I did include 3 pages that go into detail on each one of the components as to whether there is a small increase for that component or a decrease. And I'd be glad to go into that in detail if that's what you'd like me to do or answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the committee? If we could have a motion, please.
I move that Ledge Council submit the Legislative Affairs Agency FY09 budget request to the Senate and House Finance Committees for their review and action.
We may have a roll call.
Senator Cowdery.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Elton.
Yes.
Senator Green.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Samuels.
Yes.
Representative Stoltz.
Yes. Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
13 yeas, no nays.
All right. Thank you. The next item that we have up is the annual revisors bill. And if we could ask Pam Finley, who's the revisor of statutes, and Catherine Kurtz, who's an assistant advisor of statutes, to please come to the forward to the table. And if you'd please state your name and your title for the record, and then give us an overview, we would appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Pam Finley. I'm the revisor of statutes.
And my name is Catherine Kurtz. I'm the assistant revisor of statutes.
Thank you for considering the revisor's bill so promptly. The revisor's bill is usually was not last year. Introduced annually. The purpose is to correct errors in previous laws, to update obsolete provisions, and occasionally to improve the substance without making any policy choices. It's a cleanup bill. In this particular one, there are various things. I did include a sectional analysis with the bill. Just very briefly, we're dealing with a dispensing opticians board sunset, a change in the federal ICC to a surface transportation board, some updates of federal laws, some renumberings of the Jones Act. There were some various errors, things that we just missed in bills from time to time. The only real improvements to the statute, I think, is giving a short title to the Public Records Act and moving a definition so it's in the right place, a place where it can be more easily found. When I was looking at the possibilities, one of them involved an effective date for a bill. And I looked at this and I thought I really didn't want to put that in the revisor's bill in general because it's too weird, it's too particular. I think it should be looked at by the committees that really focus on that area of the law. So I asked Ms. Kurtz to deal with that bill, and I will pass it over to her.
Okay. In 2006, there was a bill passed that made some changes to the medical assistance program. It had an effective date provision in it that turns out to be flawed. It was flawed because it assumed that there would be one revised plan submitted to the federal government for approval. That's not what happened. What happened is some of the changes didn't need federal approval. Others were submitted and approved. Others were submitted and rejected. So the one thing that needed to happen to make this effective date work hasn't happened, and there's kind of a vacuum out there as to when several sections of this act are supposed to take effect. What this bill does is give you ascertainable effective dates for each of those affected sections.
The ones in this bill draft have been arrived at in consultation with the AG's office and the department. So that's what's here now. But as Ms. Finley mentioned, it's just a little bit more complicated, and that's why it's in its own separate revisers bill.
Do you have any questions of either of us?
May I ask a question about the changes that pertain to the Jones Act? Is there anything in there that is going to potentially have any change or impact on things that are happening with our oil and gas situation?
No, I would not think so. On the first one, there are two. One is in Section 12, which refers basically to claims by seamen under the Jones Act. And that was a specific USC site that the number was changed. You can track the provisions. They're in this new number. That one is easy. The second one is in Section 47, in which this was passed by initiative, and it says the governor shall use best efforts and all appropriate means to persuade the United States Congress to repeal 46 U.S.C. 861 at sequence, known as the Jones Act, and 861 at sequence has been scattered throughout. And I talked to the AG about this to try to figure out some way of dealing with it, and essentially what I did was punt. I said to repeal those provisions of the Jones Act formerly codified at. I don't think it really probably matters to anybody, but at least now it isn't referring to something that doesn't exist. Bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from members of the committee? All right, if we could have a motion, please.
I move that Ledge Council submit the revisers bill to the Rules Committee for introduction.
All right, we will call for a roll call vote.
Senator Cowdery.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Elton.
Yes.
Senator Green.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Samuels.
Yes.
Representative Stoltz.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
13 yeas, no nays.
Thank you. Thank you. The next item we have. The next item that we have on the agenda is the Block 39 update, and I see Chris Christensen in the audience. If you, oh, pardon me, Ryan McIntyre, if you could please come forward. I apologize for putting you on the spot, Chris, but we'll probably do it again. Please state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ryan McKinster. I'm staff of Senator John Cowdery and Legislative Council. And I appreciate you trying to get Chris to come up here to do this for me. Probably easier. the Legislative Council last year decided, after being approached by the court system and originally Municipality of Anchorage, to look at the idea of working on a combined-use building in the Anchorage downtown core area. The court system already owns that property, and they need to update their building. The Snowden Building is basically not, for I guess simple fact of it, it's not efficient. It's not, the space isn't usable for what they use it for. And secondarily, there are some building deficiencies that have been realized in that building. So they're going to have to replace it at some time. The court system approached the legislature to ask if we'd want to work together to create a combined use on the block so that economies of scale could be realized for the monies. The reason we're back before Legislative Council today is last year, Legislative Council voted to go forward with two bills, SB 167 and HB 249, to move forward with this project, basically to do a lease purchase agreement over the term of the project so we can get it accomplished. After going through the design process with RIM Architects in Anchorage, the number cost associated with the project is quite a bit larger than originally envisioned. For a little bit of background, the building process, the Municipality of Anchorage was interested in being involved in it also for the parking garage aspect of the project. Subsequently, going through this review process and the architectural process, they deemed that not to be something they want to move forward with. Probably one of the reasons you could probably assume that might be a case is because there's actually other parking garages going up in the area. The court system still has a need for parking. Right now, they're parking jurors, you know, in other lots all around the city, and some of them have to walk 6 to 7 miles to fill their, you know, obligation as a citizen of the state.
And miles?
6 or 7 blocks, did I say miles?
Yeah. Wow. In awful good shape before they get to the
yeah. I stand corrected, 6 or 7 blocks, which in the summer, I guess, is not an issue, but in the winter, it can be. So basically, the court system still intends to move forward at some capacity at some time with redoing their building and redoing a parking garage. And so we're coming together right now to say, hey, can we do this as one big project? Obviously, they're going to be distinct entities sharing certain systems, HVAC, electricity, and stuff for cost efficiencies, and there's a parking garage associated with it. I guess the point to get to now, Madam Chair, is the number. The total number projected for the project would be, our original number was about $40 million for the total project. Now we're at $86.5 million for the project. And in your pack, basically the bill itself will have to reference that number. The total cost of the project over the life of the bond and our yearly debt reimbursement. In your packets, you have three sheets from Alaska Housing Finance Corp. Giving the terms for three different debt reimbursement packages, a 20-year, a 25-year, and a 30-year. If Ledge Council decides to move forward with the project with these new numbers, we would need to amend the current bills with the appropriate numbers that Ledge Council found deemed appropriate, whether it's a 20, 25-year, or 30-year bond. And Joe Dubler from HFC is online, and he can speak to some of the questions regarding the debt service and how those numbers are arrived at and the process that we go through with that. I'm not the financial wizard that he is.
Thank you. Ryan, before we go to Joe, are there any questions for Ryan from members of the committee? Thank you. Joe, are you with us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm here.
Please identify yourself and your affiliation, and if you could give your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joe Dubler. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Finance Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And I guess I thought I was going to be available for questions, but the only testimony I'd give, I guess, is that the numbers that you have before you, the three debt service projections are exactly that, projections. And while I think they're probably going to be a little closer than the difference between the original cost projection you had of 40 and the current one of 86.5, they could go up or down in the future depending on interest rate environments. And obviously the 20, 25, and 30-year scenarios are the numbers are different because of the different term. But, I mean, we got involved in the project at the request of, and to be honest, I don't remember who requested, but we got involved mainly because of our involvement with the Atwood Building downtown and the subsequent parking garage that is being completed as we speak, and we financed both those projects for the state with a net lease back to the state, and we're anticipating a similar structure for this facility if it goes forward. So with that, Madam Chair, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Speaker Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In full disclosure, Senator Elton came to me the other day. He wanted to know if this building was expandable or not because he thought that, you know, maybe we could. Yeah, no, never mind. What's the name of the person online?
Mr. Joe Dubler.
Joe, Representative Harris. Is this building the way it's designed, at least the legislative part of it, expandable if needed to be?
Through the chair, Speaker Harris, I'm not the design guy. I saw pictures of it. I participated in the meetings. There were some big room, a couple big rooms, a bunch of little offices. It didn't look like it was that expandable to me, but like I said, I'm not the architect or an engineer. And whether you could put something on top of the building or not, I don't know.
That was my point. My point is expandable up. I mean, is the building designed, foundation, walls, all that kind of stuff designed to go up if needed, if the desire was there to do that?
I believe we'd have to check with the RIM architects, and they would. I'm sure they would know, but I don't have that information.
Okay. Thank you.
Ryan, do you have any information on that?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, through the chair, this building as designed cannot be added on to. When you go up a couple floors, we found out with design, there's different structural requirements for foundations and even some of the permitting and processing for, you know, earthquake proofing, fireproofing, depending on certain times to, you know, escape the building. So according to the architects at RIM, this question's come up a couple times, and they said that currently as designed, this building cannot be expanded. We'd probably have to start over the process that we started back over in October.
Okay. Might be a decision about bill referral. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan, and thank you, Joe. Are there any other questions from members of the committee? Senator Elton.
Perhaps not a question, Madam Chair, but a comment, because I anticipate that somebody might be thinking about a motion. I mean, I would just suggest that making a decision on this at this point in time may not be the best thing that we can do. I mean, we've just found out that the price of the building has doubled. I see a stair-stepping here where it's gone from $40 million to over $80 million. I'm just not sure that given the issues and the challenges that we're dealing with in the criminal justice system, that right now this is the best expenditure of, you know, on a building that has now just doubled in cost. I mean, we've got challenges with caseload in the court system. We have VPSO challenges. We have challenges with the public safety department. So I guess my recommendation is this should go on the side burner until at least the next meeting so that we can absorb what has happened with the cost, and so that we can, I mean, there are significant changes in the design plans that we have in front of us now over what we saw in the last meeting. And I would also suggest that we need to think a little bit about this building meeting a market test now that the municipality has backed out of it. So I'm not arguing against the proposal at this point, but I'm arguing that we need some time to absorb the significant changes that we've seen both in cost and in design.
Are there any comments or questions from any of the committee members? Representative Wilson.
I agree with Senator Elton, and I'm not quite convinced that it isn't the start of a capital move, and so I have some concerns about that, and would like to wait so I can check out some of this a little bit more.
This is Senator Hoffman. I have a question for Chris Christensen. Does he have any comments regarding Senator Elton's points on the services?
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Chris is making his way to the table and will identify himself.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Chris Christensen, Deputy Administrative Director of the Alaska Court System. Senator Hoffman, I'm not sure I understood your question, sir.
Could you repeat that, Senator Hoffman?
There were some concerns that were raised by Senator Elton, and I was wondering if he had a response to them.
Through the chair, no, I really don't. This is really a legislative decision, and it's something this committee has to figure out, I think, without our input.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Representative Stoltz?
That was a cop-out.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the concern of the creep issue being raised, in this case, construction cost creep. And Mr. Christensen, do you see this, if we delay it, does that really obviate the rising costs? Are we just going? I know that some of the local projects I've been working on, delay has been our enemy, and it's now we're looking at projects that have doubled and even tripled with the rising steel, concrete, and do you see a downward spiral with real demand or any downward, or are we just, delay going to really give us any comfort?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, my understanding is that I know what we have seen in the last few years trying to do court construction projects, for example, rebuilding the Palmer Courthouse and the Kenai Courthouse, is that costs have gone up fairly dramatically each year. And there are a variety of reasons for that. The cost of steel has gone up pretty dramatically. My understanding is that the expectations are that this trend is going to continue. I think part of the reason this project is more expensive now, quite aside from the municipality dropping out of it and not building a parking garage, is because 1 year later we have some additional costs just due to the increased cost of the passage of a year. And again, whether or not these increased costs, Kit Duke, who is the architect, the court system's facilities manager, I believe is online and may be able to answer some questions along that line if you had any.
Do we have someone online who wishes to testify about that? I don't have a name of anyone signed up, so. All right, no follow-up, okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Samuels.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I've got a question for Ryan, I think. Do you have some just general information? We've got the Ombudsman, Ethics, Ledge Audit, Office of Victims' Rights. So all of these legislative functions will get together and you'll save the rent on all of those things. Can you get us some numbers on how much we'd save in rent as opposed to what the costs are? And also, how many legislative offices are incorporated into this design?
Through the Chair, Representative Samuels. Total costs overall, obviously, we wouldn't be saving building a building over the short term, the next couple of years. But with the prices right now, as the RFI we discussed earlier, looking at mid $2, $3, up to $4 prices for lease space, even under the expanded cost of this at a 30-year term, we're probably going to realize cost savings within 10 years and then obviously own a building at the end of it. We can't be expected, talking to Kit today, this morning actually, about that issue alone for, cost per square foot. She didn't expect, you can't expect to keep a 266, which with this works out around to be 266 per square foot is our cost, not including, just what our obligation is for the building. If we want to compare it to, the RFI, we can't hope to keep that number at that number for the long term. So under the current cost, just for our part, that's not assuming everything else, just what we would be replacing with what we currently have now would be about $2.66 per square foot for the building.
Okay. And you know how many legislative offices? I mean, do you have 60 offices in here?
Through the Chair, Representative Samuels, we do not. I actually have it here. Let me look at that for you. We have 7 regular legislative suites for House suites, 14 House suite seats, 7 Senate suites, and then 2 leadership offices. And then we have 16 overflow offices. They're smaller offices, 1 to 2 staffers like we currently have. We've added to those numbers just because everybody wanted space in Anchorage, but they're not suites or anything you can consider like a permanent office space.
So you got 14 House plus 2, so 16 House total, 9 Senate total, plus how many smaller? Just
16 overflow, include some other ones such as if you have minority press. We've included both majority press and minority press for both Senate and the House, and webmasters for both of them, because currently some of those people don't get space up there, and a lot of times leadership offices and the minority leaders want to have some of their staff up there because sometimes they need to be there for press issues.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have an idea of what the construction timeline is? There's a building there currently that's got to be demoed. Plans are far from finalized, what my impression is. Would construction be starting this season or next season?
Through the Chair, Representative Guttenberg, it's actually in here for more development to read about. But the idea is if it was okayed this year, assuming the bill is passed, we'd start 2008 immediately going out to get the final construction papers created. And then we'd basically begin building in 2009. That would include the knockdown of the warehouse building. It would be phased in. And we'd intend to occupy the building, the legislative and court building side, on, I believe, the south side of the block by 2010. And then the garage would be fully complete on 2011.
All right. Are there any more questions? Representative Wilson.
Thank you. One of my questions is there are 14 representative suites, and some of them are fairly big. And my question is it possible with this the way it is now, is it possible to, by rearranging and doing a few different things, to make it so that there would be 60 offices?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I don't believe so. According to our space designers, RIM architects, these aren't that big a spot, to be honest. They may look like on the diagram, but they're not really that big. And one thing that I came to learn through the process is, when laying out these offices, there's certain things like the certain core elements, elevators, infrastructure, electrics, our networking, stuff like that, really make it. They fit this in here as tight as possible to try to get us the space, but it wouldn't be really practical to add more offices. Basically, if you wanted more offices, you'd have to have more floors, which we can't do with this floor plan.
Thank you. Senator Green?
I move the Ledge Council approve the updated fiscal backup for the Block 39 project, and that the Council supports amendment of appropriation bills in order to carry out the project.
Thank you. We'll ask for a roll call vote, please.
Senator Cowdery?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Elton?
No.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Representative Coghill?
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Yes.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Samuels?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Eleven yeas, two nays.
Thank you. The next item that
Madam Chair, would it be possible to designate Representative Samuels' office for 2011 so that he would know where he would be? He was a little concerned.
Maybe, Senator Stevens, we should create a subcommittee to discuss those types of things. Thank you for that humor. The next item that we have on the agenda, Representative Wilson, do you have questions you'd like to put on the record? Statements? All right, thank you. The next item that we have is the Kodiak office space RFP, and if Ms. Varney could give us some information on that, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since this is an RFP, it is confidential, so we do need an executive session motion.
I move that Ledge Council go into executive session under uniform rule.
Yes.
All
right. Nice to hear that.
Can we have order?
I'll repeat my motion. I move that Ledge Council go into executive session under uniform rule 22B1 and 3, discussion of matters the immediate knowledge of which would adversely affect the finances of a government unit, and discussion of a matter that may, by law, be required to be confidential. I ask that the following staff remain in the room to answer questions. Pam Varney and Jan Price.
Thank you.
This is slightly smaller.
Do you need a roll call vote?
All right. With that, we are out of executive session. And Senator Green.
I move that Ledge Council approve the final award of RFP 455, the Kodiak office space, to North Star Rental Properties in the amount of $59,194.08 per year.
And we will have a roll call vote on that, please.
Senator Cowdery.
Yes.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Elton.
Yes.
Senator Green.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
I want to ask a question. Can I ask a vote? I apologize. What number did you say? On my page, it has 4,932.84.
Per month.
Yeah.
And so it's 59,000.
Well, you said the whole year? Yes.
Representative Samuels.
Yes.
Representative Stoltz.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
12 yeas, no nays.
Thank you. Is there any other business that members of the committee wish to bring forward? All right, well, with that, we are going to adjourn Ledge Council. It's 20 after 1, and we thank you for your participation.